Why did the governor not fund this?
The, which one? The CL-215?
It says no funding.
Well,
on the, different
on the ones that are listed as all capital, they were funded because they're not really in the operating budget per se. We just didn't list anything under BRC action. But in fact, the statewide fire warehousing and communications were funded together at $854,000, I believe, and the CL-215 was funded at $5 million even by the governor.
That would have been a different bill if we took it out and resources and been looking at it separately.
Okay. Further questions?
Okay. The next BRU is oil and gas management. This is broken down into a total of five components. The first one is really probably the most important, and that is oil and gas lease sales.
Just hang tight, Chairman. Hang tight for just a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry, we got a new volume here. All right, we're in volume three.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask for back to why were the experimental forests disapproved too, following Senator Ray's question? It seems to me very valuable. You're really getting something going up on. You have three or four small forest areas.
Yeah, there are three experimental forests, one demonstration forest.
Very small amount of money.
Yes, I don't know. That was a BRC's action. So.
Hope when we go into this final budget to look at that. Thank you.
Yeah, we had it as a fairly high.
We got a new guy with a master's degree, so he didn't know anything about anything, and he makes decisions for you.
Okay, continue.
Okay. Under oil and gas management, the first component is lease sales, and this really is those things that are new initiative for oil and gas leasing. First project, which has all those acronyms in there, is a joint project we've had going with the United States Geological Survey to evaluate areas in what was called PET 4, now called the National Petroleum Reserve, as well as the wildlife range up there, in terms of interpreting data that we are able to obtain, which helps us basically get a good understanding of the geology on the North Slope area, which, as you're probably well aware, is a highly prospective area. The following eight or nine projects, which go from Upper Cookin lease sale all the way down through Chukchi Sea onshore and offshore lease sale, those are all lease sales that are on the oil and gas leasing schedule that we submitted to the legislature. This isn't all of them, but it's those for which we would like to get at least some work started during this year. Some of those are FY81 sales, but others are sales that are scheduled for future years. But there is at least some preliminary work in the way of economic analyses and preliminary geologic work and geologic interpretation that we really need to get started on in order to pursue this fairly aggressive schedule of oil and gas leasing. And each sale is basically conducted the same in the sense that we do the same types of analyses, both geologic, economic, social, environmental, et cetera. The one that follows the Chukchi Sea, it's called seismic data collection and analysis. That has a zero beside it, and the reason is that that's all capital. But that's slightly over $2 million for purchase of seismic data and possible enhancement and additional interpretation of seismic data, which we really have to have in order to have some idea or a good enough idea of what the prospectiveness of an area is in order to determine leasing methods and other terms of the sale. The last four projects there are pretty small amounts. The leasing schedule is the actual cost to us of going through and evaluating the various areas in Alaska. Before I get to that, I should say one more thing about the seismic data thing. During the Beaufort Sea sale, which was a joint sale with the federal government, of course, essentially the same area, we had the benefit of a great deal of seismic and other geologic information from the federal government, possibly around $20 million worth. And there are, of course, opportunities for additional joint sales with the sales on our leasing schedule in coincidence with the OCS leasing program of the federal government. However, some of those sales that we have on there are not associated with federal sales, which means that we're going to bear the entire cost of the seismic, acquisition, and it is fairly expensive. So that is something that you all should be aware of in terms of, the cost of this over the long run. Anyway, the last four projects are really basically related to preparing the leasing schedule, assuring that pre-leasing activities, that one was deleted, forget that one. Oil and gas policy analysis, since there are issues raised by the legislature and other parties in conjunction with leasing, lease sales. And the last one is the exempt acreage sales for oil and gas. Under the leasing schedule law, those areas which are offered for lease but are not taken or for which leases have expired, we can re-lease. And this is of particular interest to some of the some people in the state or smaller companies who may not be able to afford to bid on the huge sales, but it's a way of making of trying to get all that acreage at least under lease so that there's interest in producing it.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Ackman.
Jeff, you had a Copper River sale last year, did you not?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us what the status of that is right now?
I can, Mr. Hackney. We've issued all the leases, and I don't know of anyone who's planning to drill a well right now. I don't think we've had any requests for well permits.
What are the strictures on that? How soon do they have to start drilling?
That was done essentially under the old standard. They have a 10-year primary lease term, so it's really up to them. There's no diligence, specific diligence requirement as there were on those nearshore Beaufort leases.
One thing further, Senator, that sale, of course, was kind of a lot of scattered acreage that we happen to have. A lot of the land there is private land owned by the Native Corporation, which is, you know, they're already looking at, I think, in conjunction with Amoco. And it seems to me I read that they were going to drill at least one well there, and I don't know whether that was on state land or they were planning for this season or on Native land.
The intent of the people who have the leases is to get Amoco to put the Native corporate land and the new leases together in a block and then drill it as a unit.
New positions here, Tom?
Yeah, there are seven new positions here, all of which are from general funds and all technical people. They are all divided among the non-oil and gas projects, including the five-year oil and gas leasing schedule. And their function is to evaluate track values based on the seismic data and to determine the appropriate bidding methods for the conduct of those sales.
And you were just talking in the category of lease sales?
That's correct, although in that entire VR, those are the only seven positions.
Okay, the following component is lease sale administration, and this differs from the previous component in that this involves administering leases which have already been sold through an oil and gas lease sale. There are three projects under this component. The first one is enforcement of lease terms, and that's really self-explanatory. There's a certain amount of cost in developing and applying stipulations, making sure that the leases have been complied with. The second one is plans of operations, which are under the leases are required to be submitted by the operator and are an important part of making sure that what actually happens under the lease is, you know, consistent with local conditions. It's actually a flexible way of dealing with particular kinds of stipulations rather than setting arbitrary ones in advance. We require submissions of plans of operations so we can kind of tailor things to individual areas. And the third one is unit agreements, which I think you're all familiar with. But those are the three basic elements of of administering existing oil and gas leases. The following component is reservoir management, and most of this really would fall within the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, which is no longer in this department. There are a couple of small items there which involve support to them, but then the Interstate Oil Compact Commission. The next one...
Is this the unitization part?
No, the unitization falls under the previous one, lease sale administration, and it's the third project there called unit agreements.
Mr. Chairman, on your reservoir engineering and so on, is all that work coming along for this gas, support the gas pipeline proposal, is that all on steam, so to speak, for North Slope? Understood there may be up to a five-year time lag to get that engineering all done, that reservoir engineering down there.
That's being done under the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and they did have a final report, a final verbal report here about a month ago on the reservoir study, so it's a year and a half late, but it's on time since the pipeline's later than that.
Thank you.
Okay.
The income accounting component consists of all of the various payments which we receive from leased oil and gas lands, which we are required to account for. The first one, audit of monthly royalty reports. are those reports submitted by the producers, which indicate the amount that they're allocating for us as our royalty share. Second one is management of royalty contracts, and as you know, I think we have, what, five, I guess, that we're administering. Third one is calculation of ANCSA payments, which is the payments that we are required to deduct and apply to the ANCSA fund until the ceiling is hit, which is the $500 million. The fourth one is mineral income from mineral leases. The fifth one is adherence to federal oil and gas pricing regulations. As you know, they're fairly complex, and it's something that we want to keep track of to make sure that in areas which are under oil and gas pricing regulations that we do get fair value for this. And the last one is called work commitments and incentive credits, and what that really amounts to is developing an auditing system for those new terms that were put in the oil and gas leasing law in HB 854, and that includes things like net profit auditing system or the net profit leasing term. And the last component there is the Royalty Oil and Gas Development Advisory Board.
Every time you go through each one of these, would you tell us the total reorganization that's occurred from your last year's BRUs? Because you've done a major reorganization recommendation in terms of your different components. Transfers in from here, transfers in from there to new items. Like royalty income accounting is a new item, or a new BRU. It wasn't in last year's, but just as you go through your...
You mean to summarize where it came from last year? Where it would
no,
have been?
Just tell us the ones that are new.
Okay. Well, they're, you know, most of them are, I mean, we arranged this thing, again, on a programmatic basis, and a lot of them are, you know, quite new. There's some of them are fairly corresponding to. You mean for FY79? Yeah. Well, more or less. Not terribly.
Is there some simple list of last year's BRUs?
Okay, you do have, I'm sorry, you do have this one. I've been trying to trace each one from last year's and got all the way to oil and gas management. But each time there is a change, because last year the committee would recall that when we got into one of the different categories, I think it was parks, the appropriation levels in BRUs were cut down to such small amounts, and then on others they were so huge and into the millions of dollars. And I know you've changed a lot of these, so each time that there has been, just tell us in your...
You mean roughly correspond to what the old BRUs were?
Is yeah. That,
okay. Now, most of this in oil and gas management.
So new positions in that BRU?
Oh, in the entire BRU, all of the new positions, there are seven of them, are the ones that I mentioned earlier. All are in the oil and gas lease sales area. I'm sorry, there's one position I didn't mention. The seven new positions are all technical people who are responsible for track evaluation and determining appropriate bidding methods in support of the five-year oil and gas lease schedule.
You've lost me now. Which one are you talking
about? This is a summary of the new positions for the entire BRU.
Under oil and gas management?
Yes.
Oh, right.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if they reverse the process, we get to the number of people before we get to the category.
Okay. The next one, reverse the process.
Okay. Some of those people are in the first component under oil and gas management, the lease sales component. There are technical people evenly divided among the nine lease sales, and their function is to take the seismic data, evaluate tract values, and determine appropriate bidding methods for the disposal of those tracts in compliance with the five-year oil and gas lease schedule. The other person is a land management technician one who is responsible for assisting in claims filing and adjudication. He will be relatively evenly divided, between the lease sale administration, mineral development, and geothermal components. You find geothermal and mineral development coming up a bit later. All those positions are general funds.
Okay, any questions on oil and gas? on the resource inventory.
Okay. You want to give us some new positions on this one? I think there's only one.
Yeah. Under resource inventory and assessment, there are two components, geological investigations and mapping, and geological hazards identification. There's one new position, it's a geologist too, within the geologic hazards identification component. And his position is in support of the project entitled General Geologic Hazards. And I believe the BRC specifically earmarked his position for floodplain study.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this particular BRU resource inventory and assessment, I think predominantly comes out of, at least out of the last year's BRU lineup, would be coming to geological and geophysical programs, and would consist of the resource investigations, the publications, and the administration and support components under that, under the old budget. The geological investigations and mapping is, as you know, I mean, this department has to make a number of different resource decisions in all different subject matter areas, whether it's timber, sand and gravel, oil and gas, or whatever. And at the present time, we have really only done any kind of detailed surface mapping of about 4% of the state. And it's very important to have this kind of thing as a precedent to making those kinds of decisions, so you know what you're talking about and you know what resources are available when you have to make allocations between different types of uses. And all of these projects under resource or under geological investigations and mapping are in fact aimed at precisely that. Some of them have very small amounts attached to them. You'll see some of them, there are a number of them in there that are, you know, less than $15,000. And the reason is that last year the publications budget under the publications component was slashed fairly considerably, actually by the BRC, but the resource investigations was fully funded. And so what we have in a number of instances are resource investigations which have been completed, and we have all the data, but we just need to print it so it's available to the public. And that's, for example, the first one, Superficial Geology of Western Cook Inlet, we have all that, but we just need to put it into the report and have it printed. The second one, Superficial Geology of the North Kenai Lowlands, is one we gave a very low priority to, largely because there really isn't a whole lot of state land involved, and we've tried to concentrate on state lands in these investigations.
You may ask, sir, are there any questions on this entitled whole resource inventory assessment?
Mr. Chairman, just one question that occurs. We've had some rumblings lately that it's getting more and more difficult to open up a gravel pit, for instance. We hear stories that it takes 6 months to process all the paperwork through the division department in order to open up a gravel pit. Would you want to comment on that?
Well, go ahead.
I'd like to comment maybe sort of generally on that. That is that, I mean, Title 38, which is the Lands Act, you know, I mean, it's been around since statehood, and of course it gets amended and added to every year, generally, anyway. And there are a lot of provisions in there which individually on their merits look good as sort of safeguards and processes, you know, for notice and advertisement and all this kind of thing. But the fact is, it's sort of gotten to the point now where it does almost automatically take at least 3 or 4 months to do almost any kind of major transaction just because of the number of advertisements that we have to do. And that's something I think we're going to look at this year and make a recommendation to the legislature on next year, either by consolidating some of those processes or revising some of these notice requirements, because there's so many now, I'm not really convinced that they inform the public, you know, any more than than half of them would, but it does slow things down, and it's something that I think we really have to look at in this department. We conduct hundreds of public hearings and public meetings every year. And, you know, a lot of members of the public, if they want to stay informed on a program, almost have to be professional meeting goers in order to do that. And we would like to look at some sort of innovative ways of doing public hearings, whether it's maybe holding quarterly public hearings for the whole department, you know, covering a range of subjects, doing them on the teleconference system or whatever, we're very dependent on having accurate public opinion, and we want to have it before we make any kind of a decision. But you may have two public meetings, two nights in a row, in the same town on the same subject, and one night 5 people will show up, the next night 350 people will show up, you know, and you have no idea of why, you know, and what the significance of that is. So that's just sort of a general comment. I don't know exactly how long it takes to do these material sales. A lot of them are, if they're below a certain volume, are negotiated. But if the thing has to be reclassified or whatever, or appraised or whatever, these things that have to do, there are statutory periods which follow each of those steps, and require a certain number of days before we can do it, and that's really what it amounts to.
That's statutory, not regulatory.
Yes.
That's right. In fact, we do have a new set of regulations which raises the maximum volume below which we can negotiate a sale, and that should help some. And we've also prepared, sort of for our department, just a cookbook, what steps you have to go through for each of these things, and I'll make one available to you. It's,
all right, I'd like
it was
to
certainly
that.
Shocking to me.
Yeah.
If we put one person and said, get this gravel permit or sale out as quickly as possible, it'd still be 90 or 120 days if he followed the law.
I might, if I might make at least one additional remark about a project in our budget which wasn't funded. It was on the first page of the contents list. It's called deregulation. And deregulation is something that we all, you know, are interested in and gets a lot of publicity, but the actual process of doing it is very time consuming. And we did put that project in there largely because we knew there was public sentiment for doing it. And what that would involve would be hiring one person for 1 year to go through all our regulations and look at them as a package and pull out the stuff that, you know, that isn't needed or is duplicative or whatever. And our results delivered clause in that particular project was we figured we could reduce, at least in total volume, the department's regulations by 15%. And there's no way to do that piecemeal. You have to have somebody go through the whole package, but it is something we're interested in doing, so I'll just call that one to your attention.
Can you contract with someone to do that, or does it have to be a...
What we would probably do there would be to contract with an attorney to do it, and somebody who's had some experience with our statutes before, and with providing staff support from each division so they can get an idea of what ones are really essential and what aren't. And I think we also said in there that we'd be coming up with recommendations for Title 38 to either alter or remove some of the statutory procedure provisions, you know, that are in there that really now don't seem to serve any public purpose other than that they hold things up.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Couture.
We've been tinkering for quite a while with a good law. I'd like any backup beyond what's available to me now on this bottom line of your geological investigations mapping. Resource inventory, vegetation soils inventory. I'd like to have backup support. I see it's disapproved, but I'd like to have that backup support for whenever budget considerations come up so we can all look at it and see if it's
great.
Worthy of having a second shot at it. It may be necessary to have.
Senator Sumner?
I just comment. I would like to emphasize that my preference would be to have you subcontract with somebody like an attorney that can put that in shape and give it back, and then that'll be the end of their 10-year.
Yes, that would be a 1-year project. That's it. Okay, if you want to go on to the next.
Yes, minerals and energy development.
Okay.
We've still got two more books, and you've got half an hour.
New positions, minerals and energy development?
Yes, there are three new positions. They're all in the component entitled geothermal development. The three new positions are two geologist twos and a land management officer two. They would consist of the entire geothermal program with operating support of the geothermal inventory and assessment project.
Okay, there are three components under minerals and energy development. The first one is just straight minerals. We have a project in there for revision of mining rights acquisition regulations, which we want to update so that we can make it easier to get into mining. Mineral claim adjudication is a standard process for handling mining claims, which we do now. Plans of operation are a standard thing that goes with a mining claim. At the point at which you reach the development stage, we deal with a plan of operation for the miner. Mining offices are the four offices we have in the state, Ketchikan, Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks, where we process all and hold all the mining claims and make them available to the public. And there is tremendously increasing interest in that as more people are getting interested in minerals that are now increasingly valuable. Public assays is something we do under state law through our minerals lab at Fairbanks, whereby somebody can come in with a mineral sample and we assay it for them and tell them what the contents are. And minerals development policy analysis is associated with the fact that we figure there will be some policy issues associated with, you know, with mineral regulations in general, which we would like to be able to do the background research on.
Mr. Chairman,
there's an indication that there's going to be a great deal of activity, particularly in the Fairbanks area in this upcoming year.
Yes.
Is there anything in here that reflects a response from the department to that increased activity?
The mining offices and the public assays, both of which were budgeted back in August before the run-up in price of gold, were basically continuation projects and do not reflect substantially increased activity.
Could you give us some indication as to what it might require in order to adequately reflect the support that's going to be needed in that area?
Sure.
Yes. We'll suggest an increment for each of those two projects.
Yeah, I think we really need to look at that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Actually, all these, by the way, Mr. Chairman, all of these would have come out of the either the minerals and energy or the geological and geophysical programs, BRUs, out of last year's budget. We broke them down because there is interest in some of the particular resources here. In fact, we foresee possibly next year even adding one on uranium, too, because that seems to be an area of increasing interest. The coal development has three parts. One is surface mining control. As you know, there is a surface...
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Senator Bennett?
Next. Before we get into that.
Okay.
I've had several inquiries from constituents who have had for several years placer mining on state ground. And the chief concern is there appears to be no way for them to gain title to it. Does the department have any plans for this to allow title after due process?
It's the same mining law we've always had. They prove up a claim, they have title to it. I'm not really sure what their concerns are unless they're unable to prove the claim under the law.
No, I think, Commissioner, they're able to prove the claim. The ones that have been inquiring have been in the Live and Good area. And what they've told me is that they have gone through all of the necessary things, but they're currently no one's issuing title. I don't know what it is with the department.
Do you think when they get done mining it, extracting the product, they should have title of the land after that? Huh? They're basically philosophically opposed to it unless they acquire title of the land under some other concept.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I didn't understand what you're asking. Under the state constitution, you don't get title to the land. You have the mining rights for as long as the minerals are present, but we're not allowed to pass title, fee title.
Mr. Chairman, there was a historic abuse of that in which the big mining companies, they finished using up the product, and then for 200 years it sits there because it's not in any tax base. 50, 80, 90 years, nobody gets to use it again, and then all of a sudden they're heir to great deal of wealth. In the meantime, a lot of people would have liked to have used a chunk of it for some other purpose. A small man usually just mined and left. Big ones like FB mined, had the legal office, got the title, and they really abused the whole damn thing. Mine for as long as you're mining has always been my opinion.
Well, the disadvantage of that is several of the people up in these areas live on the mining claim, and consequently they can't by any way be encouraged to put a structure that's suitable for habitat. It becomes just a shack village. This is one of the things that...
Maybe they ought to be allowed a 5-acre tract or something to locate buildings. That's just good sense to that.
I just hope that there's some sort of a plan or somebody, a light bulb will come on to a method to when it can convey a portion of these to where...
Is there a plan of that, sir?
Not specifically tied to mining claims, but there are the land disposal programs under which they could get title to their 5 or 20 acres or whatever.
Well, we get into a kind of a box, but, I think, Commissioner, that you don't offer land out for disposal, which is mining land, by and large.
Right, which is a protection to the miners in most cases.
I think maybe I can give a
little... There must be a way, though.
Well, I think there has been some consideration of that in some areas where one of the problems we run into on land disposals is what happens if we have an area where there are a lot of mining claims. Okay, we have tried to stay away from areas that we know are heavily mineralized because there may have to be a huge operation there that would be in conjunction, you know, with... that would just be totally incompatible with residential areas. But on the other hand, in areas where there are a lot of mining claims, we've tried to maybe stay away from where the immediate mining claims are, but offer land disposals in that area, you know, which the miners, of course, are completely free to participate on, so that there is an opportunity for them to you know, obtain residential land, you know, in the area adjacent to where the mining claims are. So it's hard to tailor exactly because...
Is there any way that you might have a program where anybody has mined that ground for, say, 3 years or 5 years under their once-in-a-lifetime entitlement for a home site? That could apply to the department?
That would involve some kind of preference right now. And I'll be frank with you, it's the difficult part in dealing with some of these mining claims is that you have sort of two groups of people. You have those who are really serious miners and they're out there, and then you have people that have filed mining claims, basically, and they're basically recreational claims because that gives them a chance to build something, whether it's a shack or whatever, you know, on state land without having to go through a regular land disposal program. And it's, you know, that's sort of a case-by-case thing. You never know which one you're dealing with.
The thing that we've created now, for the most part, in these stream beds where there is mining ground, we've created little shack settlements, and with no intent of anybody in a prudent mind is not going to put up a decent dwelling or any large investment. And hopefully with all the talent we have in the department, that there could be some sort of a plan that could accommodate this.
Well, we should come up with a proposal for preference rights, similar to agriculture preference rights. If someone has an operation, be it mining or whatever in the area, maybe we could. It would require statutory change, but
again, Mr. Chairman, that constitutional prohibition came as a distinct reaction to a terrible abuse in this area. You know, I think we ought to be aware of that. But for sites, garage sites, facility sites, of course, persons should be able to get these properties.
If it could be very restricted in acreage, perhaps, so
5 acres, yeah. Then that'd be utilization of the once in a lifetime home site.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I guess we're on coal then, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Coal development, the first one, surface mining control. As you know, there was a federal law that was passed a couple of years ago, the Federal Surface Mining and Reclamation Act. And the deal, and I put that in quotes, under that law is that if the state submits a program which is acceptable to the feds and the state can assume jurisdiction, we have sort of two principles we're operating under there. Number one is anytime we can assume jurisdiction so the people in the state deal with the state rather than the feds, that's good. But on the other hand, we're not going to, you know, go along with a program that is imposed on us that we feel is a disadvantage, you know, to the Alaskan miners. And there was a study under that law called the National Academy of Sciences study that was, I think, inserted by Senator Stevens in that bill that provides for a look at Alaskan conditions to see if there are any modifications to that Surface Mining Act, which should be made because conditions in Alaska are different than they are in the lower 48. That study is late, it's not come out, and we have told the feds we're not submitting a state program until that thing is done because we want to see what those recommendations are.
We have in the Department of Commerce and Economic Development a number of proposals and requests for funds on coal mm-hmm. studies. Now, how does this tie into what DNR is doing?
Okay, I think the basic way in which you can define what DNR's role is in terms of whether of resources or alternative energy resources, and really coal and geothermal both fall into that category, is that we feel it's our business to do the resource assessment, you know, to go out in the field either by sending the Division of Geological and Geophysical Survey people out to do field investigations, or in the alternative or in conjunction either way to do the do what's called remote sensing. And in Senator Sumner's committee the other day, we had a briefing, a demonstration of our program, which we're doing in conjunction with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, to use high-altitude aerial photography plus a system called integrated terrain unit mapping, which fits into our ALARS computer program there, to be able to map as much of the state as possible, map the resources of the state, and computerize them through this integrated terrain unit mapping system using the NASA photographs as the base and adding in any additional data that we get through these field investigations. Our request here, Mr. Chairman, for example, field investigations of coal fields is the one that really is the resource assessment part of this component, involves taking a look at and even doing, in some cases, some drilling and field work on particular coal fields in the state to see, to basically define the prospect. Normally,
okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, speaking of coal fields, one of the options for extending that railroad down beyond Delta Junction was the getting into the coal fields down there. I understand there's some of those coal fields that have not been selected for state land. Can you comment on that?
I actually don't know. I thought we had selected a lot of that stuff, but I'll check on the
site.
Jarvis Creek coal fields, just 30 miles south of Delta Junction.
Jarvis Creek?
It's been a off and on ongoing mine for probably 40 years. And unless not selected by the state, I would be interested, if I'm not as chairman, to follow up to see if there's any way that any land trading comes up in the future that we can go back to select that.
Okay. It's a pretty big deposit.
Pretty good. It's the same situation starting to use some dollars.
Is it on the west side of the highway?
East side.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I might a little bit different area. A couple of years ago, I inquired reference to coal prospecting permits, and at that time, I was told that the regulations were being promulgated. I may have missed them, but that's why I have not
seen
them.
Okay.
The situation now is we've got the full set of coal leasing and prospecting regs drafted. The House is working on a bill to enact virtually the same thing in the law, and we've told them that we'll wait till the end of the session, and if there's a new coal leasing prospecting statute,
then we'll alter the regs to fit that. If there isn't, we'll promulgate them at that time. So they'll be in place whenever the session's
over. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cooley.
There are a lot of holes in the old coalition law in the past, but
I think the basic way to look at that is that as you remember, 2 years ago in the 78th session, HB 854 was passed, which was, you know, a legislative overhaul of oil and gas leasing, recognizing, you know, a number of changing philosophies. The existing coal laws and regulations are sort of in the same place that the oil and gas stuff was before HB 854 was passed, and a lot of new things have happened. There's been the Surface Mining Reclamation Act, which is a cost. You know, there's an obvious concern by a number of legislators as to, you know, what the state's share should be and how it should be calculated. Should it be a cents per ton? Should it be a percentage of gross production? That kind of thing. And that's what we are working, you know, as closely as possible with the legislature.
But if I could add just quickly, that the situation isn't perfectly analogous because the existing coal leasing statute gives us much more flexibility. We could do everything that 854 did for oil and gas just with regulations, which is what we're going to do unless there's a revision of the statute.
If I might, is there a target about when I can tell several constituents as to when they should apply for this?
We are adjudicating right now the backlog of the prospecting permits that are on file and taking them all the way through the final stage of taking them right to the decision point. And that should be completed within the next month, and we can give you a list at that time of all the prospecting permits that we will issue under the new statute or the new regulations as soon as they're adopted. So, we'll have that for you during the session, and then as soon as the regulations are adopted, as soon as the decision is made as to what the final form of the regulations is, we can actually issue those before the new regulations take effect.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, we'll get that to you. Any new positions, Tom? Well, I guess we
already
covered it. I'm sorry, pardon me. Last one is geothermal development. You won't find this really anywhere in last year's budget because this is new. And it has to do with alternative energy development. Geothermal energy, as you probably know, is something which is at least prospective throughout large parts of Alaska, not only in southeastern and south central, but in western Alaska. And as you know, it has particular value as a local energy source, which is, of course, a benefit to a number of rural Alaska communities who find it difficult increasingly expensive to import energy of any source. What we are doing is, first of all, a geothermal inventory of the state, which consists of not only identifying all the hot springs in the state, which are surface indications of geothermal energy, but also geothermal anomalies, which could be done by drilling. And part of this includes the work that we've done at Pilgrim Hot Springs in Nome during this last year, which was a drilling deal. We completed two shallow wells, which indicate that the area looks very prospective. We're going to drill a deep well this summer, which should indicate whether this thing is hot enough and in sufficient volume to support some kind of electrical power generation plant. I might add also that geothermal energy has a number of other applications simply because it's a source of heat. And in a number of places, for example, there's one in like southeastern Oregon where there's a shallow geothermal anomaly there, and they've drilled that to heat buildings, heat homes, and also to develop small-scale agriculture. Yeah. So that's the thing, is that geothermal is really tied into not only just using waste heat, but also agriculture in some of the, you know, rural communities, which we find, you know, very, very good possibility, very prospective area. Revision of geothermal regulations. This is something that's actually going on right now through a joint committee. There's a Geothermal Steam Act on the books, but it's was taken from the federal law, and it's really much too complicated. It's about 14 pages in the statutes, and it's a good idea, but what we need to do is make it simple. And the last thing is geothermal lease sale, and we're assuming that when we get done with the inventory, we'll find some areas that we want to put under lease immediately, and I think this is enough to cover two geothermal lease sales. And the last component is inspection of mines, and it's something that we have been doing in the past. It's both a safety and conservation inspection, and it also, in the course of doing these inspections, it allows us to pick up a lot of information about mining activity in the state, just so we're aware of it. That's all for that. Pardon me.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir.
The under inspection of mines, many years ago, we wiped out coal mine inspectors, and we have some new hard rock again going on. Do you have a mine inspector, mine safety inspector now?
Do you remember how that works? It's done out of contract
with the feds?
No, we do not.
No.
We want to be certain that we don't have liabilities when we have statutes and so on. And like there's a big one right now, a big underground facility being built there again in the Talkeetna's. And I think we have some mine safety responsibilities that we want to be aware of, and I'd sure hate to see this disapproved arbitrarily if in fact this is the person or the contract or whatever. We may want to read back that up.
Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That is what you're referring to, this particular project.
Okay, the next BRU is actually, the following ones here are all parks, but they budget management broken down into BRUs instead of components.
You got ahead of me. Facility Resource Administration, Youth Employment, and
that's the first one of those that total up to parks, Mr. Chairman.
Did you say that all of these are under parks?
Yeah, the ones that are that we would have put just under parks are Youth Employment and Education, Historic Resource Management, Park Operations. Those three
BRUs. I think there was in last year's budget there's something that's youth employment, something or other. It's a BRU, and then there's a parks development BRU and I'll have to look at the short form. But these are all out of the old parks BRUs and components out of last year. You get a short form from last year.
Okay.
First component is also called Youth Employment and Education. Are there new positions on this account?
There are no new positions for the rest of the budget.
Okay, as far as maybe an overview would help a little bit here. The main problem with respect to the park system is that they have been given a number of capital projects, you know, over a period of years to complete. And the difficulty is that although the number of capital projects has been steadily increasing, the funds to actually operate and maintain the park has not kept pace with them. And what ends up happening is that instead of doing preventive maintenance every year, maybe it's every 5 years or 8 years or 10 years or whatever, depending on the facility, we have to come back with another capital project to essentially refurbish the park. And that usually ends up being around 150% of the cost of what would have been an adequate preventative maintenance program. And I think that if we stress usage is going up on all of these areas tremendously because it's something that's tied to the tourism industry. And when you have more users, you have more garbage, you have more latrines to pump, you have more damage or whatever that you have to repair, more vandalism or whatever. And, you know, we do want the park system to be, you know, one of the basic attractions that helps us reach our goals for the tourism industry in the state. And, you know, part of that really goes to operations and maintenance.
Just one quick question. Where was the youth employment education last year?
Last year it was in... last year that was called the Conservation Action Corps. It was a separate BRU.
Okay. And the authorized last year was 460.2.
That's right.
And it's now down to 362, okay.
Yep. If I could make one comment on that, you'll notice on page 6 of this that it shows Alaska Conservation Action Corps, ACAC, twice. The $362,700 listed as continuation is entirely federal funding. The increment listed as 147.3 is entirely general funding. It was not approved. If that 147.3 remains in the disapproved category, the 362 in federal funds will not be available.
Say that one more time.
Unless the 147.3 listed as an increment is changed from disapproved to approved, there won't be any money available for that program at all.
Okay, the governor's recommended 383.1.
Yes.
Okay.
But that's all federal funds.
Right, I realize that.
And those funds won't be available without the general fund portion. The reason
without the 111.7?
Pardon me?
Without the 111.7?
Yes.
Those funds will not be available?
Right.
It's a matching.
Yeah.
I mean, that's our contribution to
North Carolina,
the 307 federal funds.
The reason that project was placed in as an increment was that the full $362,000 probably will not be available. The amount of federal participation in those programs has been decreasing because of the federal budget cycle. We base our projections on the prior year, but each year that's been shrinking dramatically. And the reason we placed it into an increment was that we felt that now is an appropriate time to determine whether the program, whether the administration and the legislature wanted to continue that program, if the proportion of general funds was going to be significantly higher than it had been in the past. Because in large part, we're displacing federal dollars with our own general fund dollars.
And the other reason is that we placed it as a lower priority within the department than the parks maintenance and maintenance increment.
Okay. What does this do, Mr. Chairman? What does this 383 and 111 do? What does it do now? Extraordinary maintenance?
No. What that is it employs people between the ages of 15 and 18 to work in summer camps. There are about 180 of them under last year's program at four maintenance programs in the park system.
Yeah, there's a lot of unemployment this year.
So. Okay, we're going to have to send you back.
On that same subject, they're advertising for those positions right now.
They're able to carry that through the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah.
But it won't extend beyond that. That's the reason they're advertising now. It's still going on for this fiscal year, but not the next fiscal year.
Okay, we're going to have to recess, and we'll come back tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Take care of that one bill, Senator Hackman, if you have, and then we'll continue going through parks and agriculture and finish it up.
Okay.
Senator Hackman.
Mr. Chairman, I move we take up Senate Bill 447.
There's been a motion to take up Senate Bill 447. Is there an objection? Without objection, we have it before us.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Killian is prepared to speak on this bill.
Senator Killian.
Mr. Chairman, I'm only here to testify on Section 1. The other, the diesel-powered, is strictly your decision. The only reason they wanted it added here was so that it could move because the bond bank reacts faster. But the Section 1 allows bonds for construction that takes place in a service area of a borough to be sold without a vote of the total borough. Where it comes up in my district is the Central Peninsula Hospital area needs an addition on their wing. The hospital has been self-sufficient for over 6 years now. There is an authorization in that area to levy up to 2 mils of tax to support it. But the way the bonds are worded today, you have to take it as a vote of the whole borough to issue the bond. Our borough includes Seward, Salovia, Homer, and areas that are not in any way affected by this. And it makes it very difficult to sell service area bonds if you have to go out over a huge area to get your authorization. This one would still be, it doesn't have a fiscal impact on the state. It's strictly out of the municipal bond bank.
How did Section 2 get in there?
Section 2 was in there at the request of the bond bank authority itself. It says it has a lot of requests for emergency diesel generation or diesel generation that will last until you can, you know, in places where there is no hydro, and they have a financing mechanism that for some of the cities is a lot quicker than to go through the power authority. I don't feel strongly one way or another on that one.
I do.
Senator Ray?
I don't know why they would put in there other than diesel power generation. Even though you do have hydro, you have to have a diesel powered backup system.
It's a double negative, Senator Ray. It allows for the bond bank to furnish diesel, but not hydro. See, the bill says no electrical generation, and the bill reads other than diesel.
No, that isn't what it says to me. It says accept a revenue bond for electrical generation purposes.
Yeah, no, that's it. May not issue a bond for electrical generation purposes, and then the new wording is other than diesels. So that if this passed, it could sell a revenue bond for a diesel generation, but it couldn't sell it for any other type of electrical generation. The wording is a double negative, but that's basically what it does.
That's very peculiar as a state emphasis, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tulip.
Thank you. I suspect there's many areas that this would be beneficial to, but hell, we might have wood fired and we might have several other little things that are locally very, very acceptable. That's how we powered Palmer for a generation. Wood-fired steam generation. I sure hate to see us. I can understand saying hydro is going to stay in Alaska Power Authority. That I understand, but I can't see just saying only diesel either, no matter how it's.
Well, it might open too big a can of worms. You might not even want to give them the power to go diesel. That's your decision. I'm only here basically pushing the bill for that section one, which if it doesn't pass fairly shortly, we're going to have no way to add the new wing on the Central Peninsula Hospital.
Questions?
I have a question. Go ahead. Oh, what about deleting that section and just sending it out with the section that I'm just trying to kind of run a flyer here. Just send it out with the section that Clem is speaking to and...
Section 1. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Eppercorn?
You're suggesting to delete Section 2?
Yes, I was thinking of putting that in other legislation.
I think we should call Senator Mulcahy's, is it?
Oh, this is Mulcahy's.
Yes. Okay. I think that section is directed at sort of hydro generation projects, Akatan and King Cole.
Well, this one doesn't affect...
Is the power?
No.
I don't know, I just... Rob,
I put the bill in. I got Senator Mulcahy to introduce it. We're already looking at the hydropower at King Cove under Eric Ewell's Alaska Power Authority. This one was just a request. When we put in the Section 1, Dave Rose requested the other section because he says a lot of the villages have asked for permission to bond for the diesel generation. And he said, we have the money. We could give them diesel generation almost instantly, as long as they have a population large enough to support the diesel, but we're not allowed to issue a bond for diesel purposes. So if you put that amendment in, a lot of the smaller towns that have to be on diesel could pick up bond money rather quickly.
Where did this request, it came from Rose?
The Section 1 came from my borough. Section 2 came from Dave Rose, who brought up the fact that a number of cities have requested help on generation bonds, and he can't give them the help because the law specifically prohibits him from doing anything with electrical generation. He said if you put in an amendment that continues to prohibit him from investing in any electrical generation other than diesel, he said you'd solve the problem because the cities that approach him, I've always approached him for diesel generation, the hydroelectric and wind and other opportunities that have always been when they turned to Eric Ewell for. So while I'm in favor of the whole bill, I understand Representative Duncan would be upset with it.
Mr. Chairman? This was amended apparently last year. It's 1978, I guess.
Yeah,
and,
section one, which is the one I'm interested in. Yeah, that's so that they can give it.
has to do with the municipal bond and the issuance of it. And it was a revenue bond, except a revenue bond for electrical generation.
That's the controversy that's here today. I don't feel that's wrong.
And that's it's a declaimer, all right? A disclaimer. And by putting in the words other than diesel power generation, you open it up just for that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't solve some of the other...
Well, what the fear is, and even Dave Rose said that one, that he doesn't really want the authority to put out bonds for hydroelectric and other things. He thinks that should be the power authority. It's just diesel is so simple to put on the line that it's more of a straight financing problem than an engineering problem.
Why is Duncan upset with
it? He thinks everything ought to go through Eric Ewell if it has anything to do with power. But of course, that's a House issue, so why worry about it?
It seemed to me that it opens it up here for diesel power generation for any...
It does, and then he said there'd be two authorities that would be
into energy.
Energy. And that's the only complaint I've heard about it. It's the thing about the bond bank is that it can move so quickly, you know, that if you've got the revenue picture that's satisfactory, they'll issue the bonds.
Senator Mulcahy, a question came up that perhaps Section 2 was something that affected your area.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the reason for it was is so that municipalities that didn't have the capability of hydroelectric power would have a place to go and get it.
This one just happened. I have a proposal just to try it out, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rex.
In the Section 2 there, if you change the language to say a revenue bond including... Change the word except to including a revenue bond for electrical generation purposes and then strike other than diesel power generation and then go on from there with you.
You'd really open it up, huh?
Well. The House will be delighted to put back other than diesel in that state.
I see your strategy.
Would you repeat me again?
On line 15, strike except and put the word including.
For electric generation.
And then strike other than diesel power generation and leave the rest as it is.
What's the reason for that?
And allows the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority to issue revenue bonds for any type of electrical generation purposes. It's their pledge. What the municipality pledges its credit behind it. What's the difference?
Yeah, it has no impact on
our finances. It has no impact on us. It's just the individual municipalities would be responsible for it. Revenue bond.
Not a bit.
Do you object to that?
No, sir.
Is that a motion?
I'd make it a formal motion, yes, sir.
Is there a discussion?
Read it one more time.
Okay, line 15, it would be a revenue bond, including a revenue bond for electrical generation for purposes issued by the municipality, which pledges, etc., etc.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Senator Sumner?
Does this in any way address or approach the problem that we've been talking about in terms of the bond problems in Anchorage?
We have been talking.
In terms of what we've been talking about?
This wouldn't hurt anybody.
Because of Rose's pledge. Rose's problem. Dave Rose's.
Section 1 doesn't attack at all.
Yeah, theirs is a non-profit, but right now it's self-sufficient even though the authority to levy taxes.
Okay. Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, that amendment is included. Any other amendment? Any other items?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move the bill out with individual recommendations.
Been a motion made. Is there an objection?
This is a great friend of
his. Kill him with kindness.
Johnny Holmes always liked to find somewhere to finish school out. Guess he'll be right doing that. You got what you want.
Thank you very much.
I have some backup with letters both from the Power Authority and from the Municipal Bond Bank on this, so I'll leave them with you.
It's already passed. Stop saying that.
Do we have a new pass on this, Mr.
Chairman? Yeah, I'll go for it.
Okay, back to the Department of Natural Resources. Volume 4.
I think we were starting with historic resource management.
433. Under parts. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Have we summarized the beginning parts of the question?
No,
but I didn't get an answer.
Okay. Page 185.
Volume 3?
Volume 4.
Big sandwiches and what?
Historic resource management.
Yes, sir. This, by the way, there are no new positions in any of these parks we are used. Historic resource management is a program that we carry out partially with state and partially with federal funding. These are largely continuation projects which involve just basically managing the historic resource program and doing a public education program, mostly so people can understand what the available benefits are to this program, which includes various kinds of loans and development assistance, survey records, which are in fact the records that we keep of historic, cultural, resource, archaeological properties in the state. Registration is the actual registration of historic sites on the National Historic Register. And development assistance is the assistance that we would provide to someone who is in the process of restoring, for example, an historic building. It's a program that's gone on for some time, and there's really nothing new about it this year. These are previous continuation levels.
Any questions? Historical resources? Parks.
Okay, park operations is an XBRU. There are three components. First one is park design and development. And actually, these first two components, what we tried to do is divide up the actual design and development of a park facility. And then the second part is the actual operations and maintenance of the park facility. The State Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan is a program that provides where we keep and maintain an outdoor recreation plan, but in actuality that's what gives us our eligibility for our land and water conservation funds from the federal government every year, which I think last year is a little over $2 million. And a number of state and local park facilities that are developed in the state are through land and water conservation fund, including one here in Juneau. Land management.
Senator Hackney?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Jeff, under your statewide regional outdoor recreational plans page here, under the objectives and policies, it reads the general objective of the project is to develop a continuing plan for the conservation and maximum use. It appears to me that sometimes causes a dichotomy in your own department, and I'd like you to elaborate just a little bit on what the policy of the department is in that regard.
Why don't you let me elaborate on that, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Commissioner?
Our clear policy in the park now is defined to the new director is stressing the maximum use of the state parks, essentially making very clear the difference between state parks and national parks. And I realize that yourself and Senator Bennett and our department have had a little problem in Chena Rec area recently, which
Just be solved today. But that is clearly our policy. These are parks for Alaskan citizens and tourists to use, and you'll see in our operations and maintenance budget, that's what we've stressed most strongly in this budget this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Senator Hackney withdraws his expertise on the subject.
Okay.
Senator Bennett reserves the right.
Yes.
By the way, that SCORE plan in previous years has had larger amounts in it. We scaled it down this year, so it's the absolute minimum necessary to maintain our eligibility, just because we don't want planning to, while it is a good idea, to take precedence over the actual operations and maintenance of the parks. We're going to have the money there. Land management and realty is fairly straightforward. Parks does have a number of land transactions which they have to do during the year. It may be surveying boundaries for a park, or it may be acquiring particular lands through some kind of land exchange or whatever, but they do need that function. It's basically a land management officer function to check the title and handle whatever other sort of realty functions are associated with the actual park system. Park development consists of the funds that we use for actually coming up with the park development plans. And this includes site planning and the things that take place preceding to the actual construction of a park. Park supply consists of the materials that we have in our shop up there at Anchorage, whereby we construct certain small improvements to the park system and maintain the necessary things like litter barrels and all that we have to have just as basic equipment within parks.
Mr. Chairman,
is
there any way you can work with the prison system and development of any of these tools, drills, grids, and so on? I know you have a shop, but we have the need of a training system, and we have, maybe Eagle River doesn't fit, but certainly the Palmer Adult Camp does, where they have a vocational, occupational attempt, rehabilitatory type attempt there, and boy, Parks and Rec fit right into that, where you don't get in conflict with vested trade union interests, which ought to be a hair more enlightened, I might say, too.
I personally have never heard of that idea. It sounds like a good one.
But we have all kinds of people up there that any kind of vocational addition, and would be saving money. And these little grills and stuff you make, I think it'd be a great thing. It's an outdoor type of a camp of about 75 or 80 men, and an awful lot of them are long-termers. They're nonviolent, and they've worked in the early days of statehood. We had them out there working all kinds of parks, wrecks, and things. It's a real resource. And I better be a manufacturing resource for you of all kinds of this stuff.
We'll check into that, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wolf of the Division of Parks says we have used that before, but there may be some problems as far as state liability or something, but we'll check into it and see if there's any way we can do it. I think it's a good idea, too.
Thank you. I know your new man would be interested.
Okay.
The following three projects were all capital and were not funded, but I might mention the state park system plan consists of us identifying what possible future parks facilities could be constructed in the state, and we did pass out something a little while ago. It was just a preliminary list of possible capital improvements in the state, since that is of interest from time to time to various legislators. But that's something that we would like to do a better job at, just because the park system is directly related to tourism and recreation goals, and additional capital facilities in one place or another may very well be compatible with meeting those goals. The park area master plans are in fact plans for each of the individual park facilities, so that we have a long-term program for how we are going to operate and maintain that facility and possibly expand it. Park zoning is something that we gave a low priority to. There may be times when we have to restrict certain uses in certain parts of parks, but our opinion is that we will not do that except under exceptional circumstances, where that's just simply a last resort. And as the Commissioner emphasized, our policy is that the Alaska state parks and state park systems are aimed at providing recreational activities for all types of people, and are based on making those park areas accessible to the public. Are there any questions perhaps on park design and development?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Killer.
Do you work with the local governments in cooperation with them to give them their priorities along with yours?
I'm glad you asked that question. That's what we interviewed a large number of people for that parks job when that was open, and that was the thing that we heard over and over again from virtually all the interviewees, is that the state park system is no good if it's something that's imposed on local people by, you know, a bunch of people that work in the central office, and that unless the local municipalities are satisfied with the recreational system, then it really isn't meeting public needs, and that's something we're going to stress much, much more in the future.
Go ahead.
On park maintenance and operations, as I think I mentioned yesterday, the principal problem that we have with the park system is that there have been a number of additions to it in recent years in terms of capital facilities. Each of those capital facilities, however, once it's constructed, has to be maintained. And in all frankness, the amount of funding that has gone into operations and maintenance has just not kept pace with the rapid development of these facilities. The problem that we tend to have is that without any kind of preventative maintenance program for each of these facilities, we eventually have to come back with another capital project, you know, later down the road, 5 or 10 years, to refurbish the facility, and it usually ends up costing considerably more to do it that way than through a preventative maintenance program. So we are trying to stress and have put as our highest priorities here the park maintenance functions, simply because the park system, if it is going to continue to operate and be available for people and be tied to the state's tourism goals, does have to be maintained. Visitor protection, which is the first project under that component, is aimed at handling the vastly increasing number of visitors that we have every year. And by protection, that includes basically things like ranger patrols and information facilities for the visitors, so they understand how to use the park and don't go falling off cliffs, which they've had an increasing tendency to do in the last few years, particularly people from outside. Park maintenance is just that. It's consists of a lot of rather mundane but very necessary activities like picking up garbage and pumping out latrines and all that sort of thing, which is necessary to keep the parks clean and operable. We do have a park maintenance increment on here, largely to show that there is more than one level of funding that could go into this particular item. Tom, if you could explain the reason for the increment.
Yeah, in this area, normally our increments describe an entire project. In the case of parks, the amount of money in the individual projects is so large under visitor protection and under park maintenance that we could hardly have the entire project as an increment. And so a bit more park maintenance, principally for trash removal, that sort of thing, was added as an increment within the continuation project.
So the last project there is engineering support, and that consists of engineering support for doing maintenance and repairs and, you know, small alterations or modifications of parks facilities simply to keep them operable, and it really is all tied to, again, to maintenance and operations. And the last component there is just the fixed cost for the parks. That's the fixed cost component for parks, building leases, director salary, secretary, and the last...
Any questions on parks? Agriculture?
Sorry. Under agriculture, and by the way, just agriculture is not under the NERMEC category in the budget. It's under the development and the public protection categories, and it's something we requested this year that it all be put in the NERMEC, but we were turned down by the BRC on that. Agricultural management is the main BRU. The first component.
No new positions
in this. This is divided really into four or five components, the last one, agriculture and administration, being the fixed cost component. Development and project administration is our agricultural development initiative, something that we're stressing very strongly this year and hope to in the future. Contract administration, the first project, is the administration of the existing and potential land sale contracts that we led under the things like the Delta project, as well as other agricultural land disposals, which we have done in the state both in FY79 and in FY80. The Delta Junction expansion was a proposal to expand the Delta Junction project, I think at least potentially by an additional 50,000 acres in that area. That one was disapproved by the BRC. Point McKenzie is the second agricultural development project on a large scale, and it's just across from Anchorage, and it's primarily aimed at revitalizing the dairy industry in Alaska. and that again would be primarily a land disposal, but most of this money is for feasibility study preceding to that. Red Meat Development is a project on the Kenai Peninsula. I believe Senator Kachula probably knows more about this than I do, but it is aimed at the fact that it's tied into the Delta project, and that the barley which comes from the Delta project is of course capable of being used for livestock feed and therefore sustaining an additional agricultural industry in the state, and this particular project is aimed at that. Banana is another potential agricultural project, and it's perhaps somewhat unique in that at least the agricultural lands that the state has there are adjacent to lands which are also class 2 and 3 soils that are owned by native corporations, and there is at least a potential there for a, you know, for a joint agricultural development project.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Katrilla.
Gone through. I think that, I hope that you'll look closely at returning Delta, Point McKenzie, and Enana to the funding that was requested by the department. Those are very important in the future in agriculture. The red meats program is a failure completely in the Kenai location. Kodiak is where you should be working on that. Thank you very much.
Small project assistance is a recognition of the fact that even though a lot of the attention gets focused on large agricultural projects such as Delta, that there are a number of other opportunities for agriculture throughout the state. Small project assistance is aimed at dealing with rural villages in the way of providing things such as village gardening or greenhouses associated with geothermal waste heat or whatever. But there are a number of rural villages which are interested in at least starting pilot agricultural projects, and those of course could in the future expand into commercial ventures in rural Alaska and reduce the cost of importing foods into those areas. Agricultural water use is something that actually would be done largely by forest land and water management, but it's basically an identification of the water budget, if you want to call it that, in areas where there is going to be major agricultural development to make sure that there are sufficient water supplies for irrigation. And a transportation and facility study, the last project under that component, consists of trying to identify additional transportation and transportation modes of being able to get agricultural products to market. I might add that in the land disposal program for this year that there are a number of agricultural lands which we will be selling. They are class 2 and 3 soils and they do look like potentially good areas. The only problem is that right now there's no access, or there's not good access in the form of a transportation system of getting those things to market. And that's something, of course, which we'd like to see in the future. If they're going to be class 2 and 3 soils that are devoted to agriculture, it would be nice if it would be possible for those people to actually engage in commercial agriculture and get the products to market.
Mr. Chairman, if we could return for just a second to the small project assistance.
Certainly.
It would seem to me, Mr. Chairman, that there ought to be a great deal of cooperation with the Extension Service in the area of food processing and also nutritional services in connection with this. I think we ought to consider keeping up the budget for the Extension Service in that area.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir.
If Extension had the right men and would cooperate with DNR and the other way around, why Extension would be the place for the small farm assistance. It's the historic in the South 48. That's where the small farmer got all assistance, from fertilizer assistance to plot assistance to canning the product. He's right. If you get the right men and there is cooperation between departments, that's where the money should go.
The second component in there is called financing, marketing, promotion. It consists of two projects. First one is agricultural loans, and you're probably aware of that. That is an agricultural load program, which is for the benefit of farmers in the state. There's an agricultural loan fund board, which operates within the department, and that is really the primary source of financing for most farmers in the state, has been for some time. Marketing studies is really pretty much self-explanatory, and it's in some ways is similar to that transportation and facilities study to the previous component. It's just the other half of it. We're looking for additional markets for Alaskan agricultural products. The third component is called Research and Extension Services, and basically this one is virtually entirely the Plant Materials Center in Palmer, and if you haven't visited, I would strongly urge that you do so. It's one of the really nice things that's going on in state government, and it's well run, and we're very fortunate to have good personnel operating it. And there are several things which the Plant Materials Center does in the way of developing additional agricultural products or potential products for Alaska. Foundation seed production consists of identifying additional types of seeds which can be used for agricultural products in Alaska. And a number of farmers rely heavily on this, as well as the official seed testing whereby we certify seeds that will be used for agricultural use in the state. The Soil and Water Conservation Project is the development of revegetative materials for things like pipeline corridors or cut banks for highways or mining reclamation or whatever. In other words, developing plant materials that can be used to revegetate and reclaim areas of land. And I think there probably will be an increasing, very definitely increasing demand for that kind of thing in the future. Horticulture development consists of looking at particular plants, agricultural plants like strawberries or something that are, and trying to find strains that are adaptable to northern climatology so that we can in fact have again additional agricultural products in the state which can be grown here, which are suitable to be grown here. And the last one is facility improvement, which is a small improvement to the actual Plant Materials Center itself, like in the way of residential.
Chairman, can I
answer?
Plant materials generally needs beefing and more funding. It is the bright light. The legislature invented the program and imposed it on the administration, but they carried it out very well. The thing that is aggravating me for some years is when it comes to horticultural development, the legislature put money and authorized in the beginning days of the Hammond administration for two northern horticultural gatherers to go into the northern latitudes so we don't reinvent the wheel. And they're to go and pick the existing seed stocks, fiber, soil binding materials, fruit stocks, and so on in northern Siberia, in northern Scandinavia, and around the world. Now we're short funded and they never spent the funds either, and they've opposed and not contributed, and so now we reinvent the wheel. You could read German, you know, you could probably do most of the petrochemical industry without having to reinvent that too, including the shale. Again, we've had that funding and it's depleted itself, and they haven't spent it, and they haven't got two men out there gathering, and it would have taken a complicated period of time to get better with the State Department and everyone and get our gatherers out there and picking up exactly what exists at these latitudes, transporting them to the plant materials farm. And that's a problem with having the federal inspection necessary. But still, nothing's been done in that whole area, and this is the fifth goddamn year. And we're going to reinvent here what's already been done in a greater part of the world where they had to have an economic agriculture located in these various little regions. I've seen pictures of stuff in Siberia that would make you sick not to have here. And everything of real value has come here from Scandinavia through Canada or directly here anyway when you get the small grains or food stocks or North Germany. We should be out there doing and picking and getting the materials that are available instead of going through all the inventive things, trying them here. And the department is very derelict and should be in here now asking for more money for that program and get those two people out there in a year or two's gathering program. You could save tens of years of time and millions of dollars, and our people would be the beneficiary. And I'm really indignant with them over not proceeding. And this has been a five-year debate I'm getting damn tired of. And this is the first, this is my vehicle, and I should choke somebody.
Mr. Haynes?
Yeah, if I might ask Senator Petula, is there some kind of problem with actually getting those plants into the United States? Because
there's quarantine problems, but you had 5 years to work the thing out, and there isn't that much problem with seeds.
Okay, well we'll...
And now you see you need more money, because we put in the $60,000 or so to put to them, but that's pre-inflation. You're going to need $200,000-$300,000 to support this thing now. But damn it, it should be done.
Well, it sounds like a great idea.
And then you take that product and bring it to the plant materials laboratory and grow it on and see what happens. But we reinvent the wheel. We got little scientists floating around out here, and my God, I'm going to quit it with just saying one thing. Etta barley, which is an excellent barley, quadrupled my productivity. I had a Swede at my place work for me for 2 years working at Swedish grain station. He said, oh yeah, that's great. He said, we quit growing it 15 years ago. They had improved on it so much. We quadrupled, and they again. And that's the sort of thing that makes you lose your mind when you only have one short lifetime. And that's, again, why reinvent the wheel. Go out there and get what's there first. It's just ABC. Well, you need more money. You've got the authorization. You've got the legislation intact. And you even have some of the money intact. You're not doing a damn thing with it.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we'll be glad to resubmit some material on that subject, too.
Hey, I love you guys, but I'm really indignant with the whole thing. This is my forum. I'm going to shut up. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Proceed.
Okay. The fourth component there is state fairs. And that's really just that's been a standard program for a long period of time. To run a number of state fairs around the state, which goes through the Division of